लाइट कैमरा
रोलिंग
एक्शन।
वेलकम टू माय पॉडकास्ट लेट्स टॉक अबाउट वर्टिकल्स, अ प्लेस वेयर सीक्रेट्स आर स्पिल्ड, स्टोरीज अनफोल्ड एंड द मिस्टीरियस वर्ल्ड ऑफ वर्टिकल्स इज रिवील्ड इन ऑल इट्स ग्लोरी। Behind the scenes? Oh yes. Exclusive insights? Absolutely. Eccentric characters? You bet. So, pull up a chair, pour yourself something suspiciously strong, and prepare for a conversation you didn't know you needed. So, welcome to the podcast Let's Talk About Verticals. And now, let's talk. Hello and welcome to my podcast, Let's Talk About Verticals. Today, with another lovely actress. I saw her as a villain. I saw her as a lovely woman, wifey. And she joins me for this episode. And I send lovely greetings and hello to Molly Anderson. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for having me. Very excited.
To be honest, you are one of the only actress or actors I know which plays villain and also lovely characters. Yeah. Because mostly are pigeonholed in the character they started, even the always being hot CEO billionaire or always being the villain. But you are one of the actors I know I saw in both kind of roles. So which role you like more, being nice or being not so nice?
Whichever one is better written is what I always say to that, because I've had some of my favorite characters. Like, I've had villains that are so dynamic and layered and well-constructed compared to some leads that are very copy-paste. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, vice versa. Like, sometimes you get a lead where the story, it's their story, their driving story. And very few times do your leads actually get to drive the story. Usually you just kind of, the lead will stand there and everything rotates around them. People mm-hmm. do things to them and they're just affected by it. And so I'm always excited when I get a lead opportunity where I'm actually kind of in charge of my own like destiny in the script, or I'm actually taking action instead of just like sitting and waiting for stuff to happen to me. So some of my favorite like villains have been Misha and Back Off, The Prince Is Mine.
Yes, Amanda, that was a great one.
I love Misha.
That was a great one. That was a great.
She's so fun. She just wants to be a princess. Amanda for Falling for a Superstar is one of my favorites.
Yeah, I'm very excited about this second part. The trailer was so good when you walked in with your red lips and red costume and hello, here I am, listen to me now. I love that. I really love that.
I haven't seen it yet, so I don't know how she's turned out, but I heard that they released the first 11 episodes to a couple of fans to get some input on it, and they seem to like
it. I only saw the trailer, but the trailer catched me already.
The trailer was so fun.
When I heard there will be a part two, I was the first... The first thought about this was, oh, yes.
Yeah.
Right.
That was my first sequel. I loved it. I thought it was so much fun. And I loved how much the writers wrote for us as actors. It was the first time I feel like I've had a part that was specifically written for me.
But that wasn't clear when you did the first part that there will be a second, wasn't it? Or was the second part decided because of the... lots of viewers and the feedback, we want a part two of this, or
yeah so we had no idea. And I hopped on that project so last minute. I was kind of doing it as like a favor to the production company who I had worked with before, because mm-hmm. they had I don't know if they dropped out or just like they realized very close to shooting they didn't have the role filled. And so they texted me, hey, would you be willing to come in for just like a couple of days? Like, no, nothing either. And I was like, yeah, sure, why not? And so I
and now
up
you're
and
trapped
was...
in the second part.
Now I'm Amanda. Yeah.
But I really love the decision to make a part two, because there are so many verticals who need a part two, who are not finished or had such a shitty end, which makes no sense.
Sometimes you'll get a script and it's like they leave it open-ended for there to potentially be a sequel, but then the series doesn't do well enough to incentivize a sequel. And then it just like dies. And you're like, okay, I guess we don't get to find out.
Those shit cliffhangers, really. I hate them. I love the Candy Jar app because they really dropped a few verticals clearly stated as a part one. And drop then also a part two, sometimes even a part three. And for me, that is really great when I see part one. Okay. And the end is so cliffhanger shitty style. There is still hope that I will get the answers to all of them. But there are so many other verticals and other platforms where I was so, what? That's the end? Really? Really? No, that doesn't make sense. So
I was
asking me very often, is this satisfying for the actors to make such a shitty end?
I think a lot of times you try not to get attached to the verticals because they're so unpredictable and you don't know if it's even going to come out. Like sometimes you'll shoot something and it never gets released because like stuff will happen within the studios or like the platform will go under won't, you know, there's a million or the thing gets shopped around for distribution and like doesn't find a home for like a year or something. So
but how often did this happen? I never heard about that.
It's not too often, but it does happen from time to time that your project won't be released or it won't be released for like months after, which in vertical space is like rare because it's on such a cycle. So you try not to get attached or, you know, you have your performance and then the client's going to come in and chop it all up in the edit and like just completely change it. Or I've had what happens a lot of times is like, it'll be when you're shooting it, the tone is like, we're doing this as like a comedy. And then in the edit, they change their mind and they decide they want it to be like a heavy drama. So I think
I would love to see more comedies, really.
Me too. I love the comedies. I think they're the most fun.
Yeah, because we shouldn't forget verticals are just for entertaining and not for anything else. And when there is a little bit of comedy in it, I really love it because it's so fresh, so excited to see what will happen next. And not this typical this, that, then will this happen, then will that happen, then he will get kidnapped, then he will, you know. So so often it's after 2 minutes, you know what will happen next.
Yeah. I think that comedy really like warms up the verticals too. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they get very almost sterile feeling. Sometimes it gets to feel very, very staged, very structured and very predictable. And I think the comedy really helps to make it feel almost like it grounds the verticals a little bit by making them feel kind of human again and kind of reminds us that it's supposed to be like a fantasy story and, you know, not a procedural. So I want to see more comedy and verticals always. I want to be the rom-com girl. Like I keep trying to pitch myself as, because I've done a couple of rom-coms and they're my most favorites ever, but it's just not as common, I think, as it was. Like rom-coms had like a little bit of a phase. And then once the heavy drama started getting really popular and, you know, the abuse stories really kicked up, it felt like that wave of drama and kind of the like torture porn like swept over the rom-coms and pushed them to the side. And now it's just not very common to see rom-coms. So,
no, but I love it. When I see there comes a vertical out, maybe this one where Jake Topps switched the bodies, this body, No, I was so surprised how funny he could be, really. You know, because I saw him always in this classic CEO billionaire serious stuff. And in this vertical, I was so surprised how funny this guy can be. But I don't know, you know, I don't understand why this typical story still sells. If it's
I think
only
it
me
really
which is overloaded about this.
No, it's definitely not only you. I think it sells because I think the predictability of it does help for a lot of the audience base who want to know that they're getting the same story. And I think when it reaches, especially like the more graphic or like intense stuff, gets a lot of like rage bait. And so when it gets pushed out to people who aren't familiar with verticals and it's the first time they're seeing something like this, and the image is like this girl just getting absolutely abused, people love to be like, oh my gosh, that's horrible. No, there's no way. Oh my gosh, that's awful. That's horrible. And
And
now
then
it's
the Cinderella story in the happy end with
but
the
I don't even think
Prince
it matters.
Charming.
I don't even think they have to get that far. I think just seeing like the social media engagement and like people will buy it just for the sake of like hate watching almost. And so some of the really graphic violent stuff keeps getting views for the same reason that like violent videos of from like, you know, wherever the corners of the internet like generate violent videos. Like those things always, a video of someone getting killed is always going to get. It was just horrible. That's like the dark side of social media, but it fuels a lot of money to keep making these really shocking stories for the sake of like the shock value of it.
Yeah, because sometimes I think with some types in the verticals, I'm sure that some people get triggered in a bad way when they see this. And I don't understand why it's always selling.
No, and I think it's really important that we continue to like advocate for like fewer of these stories because I think overwhelmingly, like the actual fan base that builds the verticals and maintains it, like there's a lot of people who kind of come and go through them and just like catch one and then they're done. But there's this whole community of people that are really like the foundation of the viewership that are like contributing to it and have the fan pages and actually like know that they're like in the space. And I just don't think it's fair to all of those people to continue to offer them the same, you know, eventually people are really going to tire of it, especially the really triggering stuff, which is usually not handled well. And everyone talks about like no SA in verticals and like reducing the abuse in it. But if it's going to be in there, at the bare minimum, we need to start introducing like a trigger warning for like, hey, here are some of the things you're going to see in this. And let's be careful with what we're like shoving in people's faces when they're not necessarily anticipating to see something so shocking. But you know, we do what we can as fans, as actors, as creatives, like we push and we push and we push, and the people at the top decide based on their own factors, and we can just continue to shout up, hey,
Do you
you know.
have the feeling that there is a little change going on, or it's
Yes.
still the same?
So it's kind of been divided into a couple of camps, I feel like, where there are some platforms that are willing to be experimental with new stories and characters. And while that's kind of growing and getting momentum, you still have these platforms that are putting a lot of money into the predictable stories, which contain those elements oftentimes. And so I think the hope is that like the experimental ones, you just need a couple to do really, really well to attract attention. But when we talk about numbers in the vertical space, you have to have hundreds of millions of views for something to be considered like a big shot in verticals. Now it varies by platform. They all have their own kind of metrics for it, but you're talking at least like tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of views. And so
That's a
even if something
lot.
it's a lot, but so even if a vertical gets like 5 million views, that's a drop in the pond. Like you're just not getting that kind of traction. And so you need the little ones to really go viral. But a lot of times that takes a lot of money on the marketing front. And a very prominent strategy right now is to wait until the vertical hits a threshold of organic viewership and then put money into it, which is why sometimes shows will suddenly do better like months or down the line after release if it didn't get the initial push. Because once it hits that like whatever 5 million or, you know, I'm making then they get money into it and then it'll do better. But the companies don't want to take the risk on the little ones because most verticals, I think, are like not profitable. But you only need one that is incredibly profitable, and then it'll fund all the rest of them, which are kind of like
That's kind of interesting because sometimes, you know, there are so many platforms. I have 48 apps on my handy at the moment. And I know people with lots more, and you know, some platforms there are the viewers are not even reaching 1 million. I think a few times then you look others like on Real Short, for example, Breaking the Ice, you know, the or which one was released last week with Sam Meyerson, who got 3 million in the first 24 hours. And I think then, how does it work when other platforms not even reach 1 million? For whom they are producing and why keep they producing? Because I cannot believe that they're make money out of it. So
I think a lot of them don't make money is the answer. And that's why they're made so quickly and cheaply. Because the more expensive they are, you're just losing that money most of the time. But, and so it's kind of the roulette of like, which one is going to, if we make 10 in a month, we need one of them to like do okay. But the thing is like that number is completely wrong. It's like, you're making way more than that. And you just need one to get like 100 million, and then that can offset the rest. But that's why it's so fast and furious, is because chances are the one it's not going to do well.
I have the feeling that in the last weeks, there were a lot more new ones dropped out than last year at this time.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it's kind of like we're seeing the fish pond of it all, where the smaller companies are getting eaten by the bigger companies. And so there's kind of this battle of like, yeah, you've got 48 platforms, but there's really like 300, another number I'm making up. But those aren't going to exist in 6 months, but they're going to get to, you know, the big ones. And so then that's why also titles keep switching platforms very often. After like, I can't find it, and it's like, oh, now it's on Dramabox.
And sometimes a very old one is released as a new one on another platform, and you think, I know, that's not new. So, but I have a question. When maybe, for example, your vertical is released on Real Short, and maybe 6 months later, it's released on Dramabox, for example. But you as an actor only get paid once for filming it. Or not.
Yeah, so we don't get back end. No one, unless you're producing, then you can negotiate a deal, potentially. But if you're anyone else, so that's all crew, your director, your whole cast, we don't any back end at all. So the number that you negotiate at the beginning of your contract, you have to pay with receiving that number if the series loses money, and also if the series makes $50 million. Okay. And so that's where like the negotiations start to get intense, and the discussion keeps going around of like, okay, well, when's your like, talent takes up a lot of the budget of verticals. And I know that's kind of a contentious point for a lot of people of like, okay, the actors need to stop asking. There are some outliers. There are definitely some outliers. In general, we're still below SAG rates usually. But whatever that paycheck is your paycheck, no matter how successful that series goes. And so I mean, a lot of my friends and I have experience where it's like the first vertical I ever did, I think I got $1,200 total for the entire project.
When did you do your first vertical? When was it?
May of 2023.
What was your first vertical?
And it was The Double Life of My Billionaire Husband, for real short.
Ah, wait. Yeah, that was the first one I saw with Jared Harper, where you were the villain sister, right?
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah, that was the first one I ever saw.
It's a lot of people's first ones, and I think it's so special and cute. Like, oh, that's my first one. But I got $1,200 for it. They paid me $300 a day for like 4 days of shooting. And then when the series came out, it made like $40, $50 million or something like that in total.
Yeah, you know why? So I can tell you why. Because there was the shitty thing. And this time when it came out, I got bombed with advertising for this vertical and Facebook, Instagram, everywhere. And I tried to resist, and I resisted 2 months. Yeah. And every time I saw a different episode, and then after 2 months, I got weak and said, ah, bullshit. Now I want to know what's the end of that. Huh, I have to get a membership. So, you know, I think a lot of people were catched by the ads to this vertical, and that's why so many want to watch this and know how it ends. I'm sure
it got so big, such a blessing, but it was a really swift lesson very quickly of like, okay, now when you're negotiating that paycheck, just make sure you can sleep at night, like in your studio apartment, knowing that, you know, this is what the series has made for the company. And so then that's when the space started leveling up really quickly. People started getting their managers and agents involved. Mm-hmm. And then it became the whole Hollywood microcosm that it is now. But yeah, so no back end is the moral of that story. You hope you negotiate well at the beginning.
That's shit. Even if there are 3-4 platforms who make out money of this vertical, you only got paid once.
And we've tried to, like, as the actors as a whole, have tried to negotiate for like, okay, now if it gets multiple distribution deals, like I want to, you know, and it just won't get anywhere. And because a lot of times too, we're dealing with clients who are overseas from America, you can't even pull in like an entertainment lawyer to help, because you're dealing with like, you're not dealing with
international rights. Okay.
International stuff now too. So we've consulted with people and kind of tried to get like, hey, can we get some help? We need to have like this new space and we're all.
Yeah.
And everyone, like the legal system, has just kind of given us the advice of like, there's not much you can do because we can't do any of it. So it's kind of a. Yeah, but it's not too different from Hollywood. Like it's seldom that even in like a huge blockbuster movie that your talent is getting back end anymore. It used to be more common with old Hollywood, but as the streaming really killed it with residuals and like the death of cable. So now it's just not even really a standard thing for actors to get points anymore, which is really unfortunate because that used to be how you sustain yourself for years. Professors in college who like paid off their student loans, bought a house, and put their kids through college on their old commercial residuals.
Yeah.
And now, even if you do like a union commercial, you can walk off that set with $4,000 and they own that commercial in perpetuity.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's one of the challenges of being an actor these days is you got to find a source of income that is not dependent on your past work, because you're probably just not going to get it.
I understand. Do you also at the moment some kind of in the horizontal worlds or only in the verticals?
I'm auditioning for sure.
Yeah.
I'm trying to, so I want to actually kind of get back into, before verticals, I was doing like independent horror movies and stuff and short
Why
films.
Why is everyone doing a Honda horror movie with everyone I speak? I did a horror movie. I will do a horror movie. Is horror so in?
Yeah.
Really? I cannot watch a horror movie because then I can't forget to sleep. No way. I cannot watch horror movies.
Not for you.
Nope.
I love horror, but it's really popular. You know, the past, like, I don't know. I don't know when it started, but like horror is definitely having a resurgence. And so there's a ton of like
non-horror
being made. Yeah. Yeah, I know. I do want to get back into it because when the verticals came along, the first thing was that the verticals would pay more than any other non-union independent film by an amount where it's like not even a decision. It's like you have to, you want your roof over your head, you're going to do your vertical.
Yes. Yes.
But now that like 30 something verticals later, I'm starting to get a little itchy to just get back on like a horizontal film set.
Yes, I understand.
So I'm putting my name back out there for those. And then of course, like I have my representatives who send me like the big auditions, which is
I'm
so grateful for. I'm not coming close to booking any of them at this time.
Is it so hard to book in the horizontals?
For like your studio stuff or anything that's going on, like your big movies that are in wide release theaters, any of your like TV shows on Netflix, like anything that's at like that level, it's really tough. And a lot of it comes down to, do you have credits? And the thing, there's kind of the debate as to whether or not you actually need to be like a child star to have a successful acting career. And there's a ton of controversy around that. But there is a strong argument to be made that if you don't have credits, like a significant credit by the time that you're hitting like your teenage years, it's really hard to get that credit because no one's going to hire you unless you already have the credit. And so by the time you hit, even you're like 15 and then you walk into the audition room, you're coming in a place like Los Angeles, there are hundreds of kids who were like on Broadway as a kid. They were an Annie or they were in the national tour of something, or they played someone's child as a 5-year-old.
Okay. Okay.
That kid has been on set and has the credit and the experience. So the studio is a lot more comfortable hiring them than a 15-year-old who's never done it before.
Even there would be great talent.
Talent doesn't hold as much weight as you think it does in the
industry.
Yeah.
Is it about connections?
It's about connections. It's about looks. I mean, we live in the age, people joke about like Instagram face, like you have to look a certain way, but there's a lot of truth to that. Like there's a very specific aesthetic that's like trending, which is your conventional beauty standards, which are very shallow and conformative, and a very small population of people just actually like look like that. But that's kind of who's getting booked right now. A lot of models are getting pulled into the entertainment space. A lot of, if you have parents who are famous, then that kind of like counts as like your credits a little bit because they trust your parents. So then by proxy, they trust you.
So normally they know, okay, you have to have the gene of your parents, so you have to be talented. Okay, then I'm out. That does work.
The door. Yeah. So I think when it comes to like, I'm 23 and I have no studio credits. Like I've never been on like an Amazon show. I've never been in like a movie that's in AMC theaters for like a wide release. Like I've never been in, I'm not like a household name. But now there are thousands of other 23-year-old blonde girls who look exactly like me who do have all those credits. And so every time I get into the room, they're just never going to pick me without it over the girls who have it. Yeah. So the struggle to being in your 20s right now, and I think a lot of the vertical actors feel this.
Are in the 20s, yeah.
We're all kind of in our 20s, but it's like too late because like none of us have the big credits. So when we're trying to make the jump up from like the verticals to the mainstream entertainment industry, we're hoping that the verticals become mainstream and then finally take us seriously because we've done 30 verticals. But you know,
do you think that this whole vertical space is still at the beginning? That there will be more growing and more maybe new branches in the vertical spaces?
Yeah, I think it's I know from everything I've heard that we have not reached like the market peak yet. Like the market cap is still up there, and we won't hit it for at least another year or two, like as a conservative
Okay.
estimate. So there's still a lot of space to grow, and I think as the smaller platforms take more risks with their experimental scripts, and some of those inevitably will do well eventually. The horror ones I think have a lot of potential. There's always the elusive, what do the 20-year-old guys want? Like, what's that audience base interested in? There have been some experiments there. But I think they will eventually have like some hits in other genres, which will inspire more to come out. And in general, too, in this, newspapers are dead, rest in peace, which is tragic. Movie theaters are dying. They're shutting down movie theaters everywhere. And people are turning to their phones. And as much as I mourn like the old Hollywood and what that brought, like I am a full-time actor because of that change. And so have like the gratitude for like, wow, thank God it's so accessible to me right now. But I don't think we're gonna go back to like a cable situation. I think that streaming's here to stay. I think entertainment on demand is here to stay, and I think our phones are here to stay. And so all of those point to more structured media. Even when you look at like YouTubers and like social media stars, like they have full-blown production companies now. It's in LA, everyone works for a social media influencer. They have a whole team, it's a whole production studio. Like even just like a little day in the life vlog video might be like a tens of thousands of dollars production. So I think the idea of structured entertainment coming through our phones is only going to keep expanding, and the verticals will probably slide right along with
So
that and be
you will do someday you will do your 100th vertical.
I don't know about that. I
Maybe.
could. I never, never,
How
never say never.
what's the average of vertical you shoot in a year? So round about 2 per month or what?
Yes, last year I did a lot more. Last year I was doing like 2 to 3 a month. I think I did 20 something like in that year. And then I had to take a break. I hit two. I actually, the story goes that last year I was filming one, and for the first time ever, I had a panic attack on set. And I was just
On a
so,
vertical set or what?
yeah. It was like I stepped aside, I took a walk, and I had my moment to myself. I didn't like melt down on
Not in the
set.
scene.
See, no, but it was, and I was just, it was like my 20th vertical of the year, and I was so burned out, exhausted. And I just had this like, I was like, I can't do this anymore. I can't do this anymore. And I think I had also, I was navigating a lot professionally of like how to make that workload function with my life and being like a healthy, okay person. And my personal like issues with the things I was like being asked to do in the verticals that I found very draining, and like navigating money versus opportunity versus like morality. And so I hit a point at like I think it was literally number 20 for that year where I stepped outside and I saw the sunshine and I was like, I can't do this. And so I had had
Please
one
help
more.
me. I
So I
can't
was like, I'm
do it.
too struck by lightning right now. Like I can't go back inside. And I had one more that I had already booked for that year that I had to go film, because contracts were signed. But then I took the rest of the year off. I took like all of December and like half of November off. And I was like, I just have to be done. And so then I came back into 2025, like trying to pace myself. So this year I've done much fewer projects, but the ones that I've done, I love. Like everyone. This year has been very fulfilling, and some of them I've been to Istanbul for 6 weeks this year to
Yeah, I
film.
saw that with Robert Palmer Watkins and Ashley, right?
We went in February, and then I was back with Mariah Moss and Leif Offerdahl in June.
Yeah, Turkey is
Experiences
really
like
nice. Turkey is
oh,
really nice.
incredible. Like experiences like that every single time I was in Italy. Like I'm always happy to go travel for work. And then the scripts I've gotten this year have been really exciting to me. Some of all of my favorite verticals I've done, I think, have happened this year. I just wrapped one that I couldn't be more excited about. So
Have you ever
I've
been in China for filming a
yeah
vertical? Vietnam
yeah
also?
Not Vietnam.
Okay.
I'm interested in going to Vietnam, but I think I need to hear some more positive reviews of the experience, I think, before that's my journey. 'Cause China, I went with Ashley, that's where we met. And we
Okay.
were like one of the very first ever like LA actors to take into China. And it was just, early days of anything are always a little, you're working out the kinks, you're figuring things out, you're testing the waters. And so when we came back from China, we kind of had this agreement of like, okay, we've done our due diligence of being the first to a country. We're no longer going to be the first to a country. Like, we're going to wait for other people to come back with some thoughts. So now I kind of like to, I like to get the car facts. I like to hear a review or two from some friends before I hop over across the world, but I'd be very interested in continuing to travel.
I think Europe will grow in the vertical because, like here in Germany, verticals are not very common. There are a lot of people who say, what? Verticals? What? I don't know.
Yeah.
What? What are you talking about? Huh? I don't
Right.
know. And here it's not very popular. Surely you have your fans also, but it's not so big like in other countries. And when I started watching verticals, the first thing I saw was filming in China, and I thought, what? They flew them over to China? Really?
Yeah.
And now I have the feelings this year there was UK filming, there was Italy, there was Turkey, and I'm pretty sure there will be someday a vertical in France because the France
Yeah.
area is so nice and beautiful. Germany is also lovely, but Germany is too strict organized. I think that doesn't fit with this vertical space. No, but I think I had an episode with Michael Vaccaro, and he told me,
I
yeah, it was so fantastic. We had so much fun, really. He will come to Germany for a movie this year. And he said to me that he thinks that filming in Europe will be more cheap than filming or keep filming in Los Angeles or in New York or something like that. So his opinion is that the vertical scene in Europe will grow more and more because it will be more attractive to film here. Even to fly all the actors over is cheaper to
Yeah.
do some films in Los Angeles or everywhere in the US. So I'm really excited how this will going will keep going, because
Yeah.
all the verticals I saw, and I know they were filmed in Istanbul, and so I like that. It was really great produced.
Yeah. It's been an issue in Hollywood, and like it's become increasingly more expensive to film in Los Angeles over the past couple of decades. And now it's at the point where almost nothing films in Los Angeles anymore. And so, like, when I get my castings from my manager, it's almost always that, like, they're filming in Vancouver or Toronto or Germany, actually. I've seen quite a bit for like Europe, or like they'll
In
cast.
Germany? Vertical producing in Germany?
No,
Really?
not verticals, not verticals, not
Yes.
verticals. For like bigger TV shows and
Yes,
movies.
yes, yes.
Nothing, even those, like, are very rarely filming in LA because it's so expensive to film here.
Why?
And unfortunately,
Why?
because you
Because of the name Hollywood or because of what?
so the cost, I mean, the cost of everything, like the economy in Los Angeles is so inflated that everything is expensive. So even like if you're covering parking, like parking in a parking structure in Los Angeles is about $35 a day. And so production, if you're filming and you need to park your entire cast and your entire crew for one day and you have your trucks, you have to reimburse every person $35 for their parking ticket. Every or their parking pass at for
Holy
one day.
moly.
So, and it's just the, and even like food, like catering is crazy expensive. You know, it's probably $20 a person, maybe. Like, so just the cost of everything in LA being expensive hurts. And then to book LA cast and crew, that's kind of your like, people joke that like LA is like the Olympics of like the entertainment industry. Everyone's day rates are really high because we have to offset the cost that it of living here. And then the permits. And then if you're going through like the unions have all of the restrictions to keep people safe, but it doesn't make sense for like verticals a lot of times because it's they we're kind of working on like a vertical agreement, which like ACTRA up in Canada has done. SAG doesn't really have that yet. And so if you're going to go union or not union, you can't have an in between. And the union regulations require that you have like, you know, it's like your medic has to be from their pool of people and they have to be paid, you know, this much money and they have to be there on set, even if it's just a lighter, because that's an open flame. And now you have to pay them $500 to stand by while you flick your lighter for like one scene for the day. It's just stuff like that where it adds up so quickly. That filming in Los Angeles with, and the regulations to film in public spaces, like if you want to use the street, if you're blocking a street off, you need to hire police officers and then security guards. And then you have to have people who are actually going to physically block off the street with barricades and then the picture cars. And now you're talking about a stunt driver. A stunt driver has premium rates. Their car, they're going to charge you to use their. So it just adds up. And so Los Angeles is so expensive to film in that it's unattainable for most filmmakers at this point.
And I think the all these mansions are also expensive, aren't they?
Mansions, I mean, some of them are run upwards of like 10K a day.
Holy
Now,
moly!
those are like, that's not all of them. Some of them are very, are much, much, much cheaper than that. But if you're talking like the upper levels, it
The
builds.
big ones.
I think it's more, I think it's more common that you're talking like $2,000 to $5,000 a day
Yeah,
for
come
some
on,
of them.
but per day? Hello? Hello?
And then you're shooting, if you're doing like with a vertical, you have 100 pages in 6 days. You can't do overtime because if you have to add a day, you have to, you know, like pay. So that's where it gets fast and furious. And it's like you get one take on your coverage because we don't have time. We got to move because we can't afford to stay. And if you're like a minute, the locations are usually pretty strict. If you're over your 12 hours that you booked the place for, they'll charge you like a late fee that can be upwards of, you know, hundreds or thousands of dollars, which
Okay,
you can.
if I will win some millions, I will buy a mansion and rent it only for filming.
No,
Come on.
seriously, that's a lot of people pay off like their mortgages on these homes by using them
I totally understand.
And
No
that's why, like,
easier way.
Real Short built a studio in Los Angeles this year because that was cheaper than continuing to. And then you have control over your space, so like it makes it cheaper in the long run.
I
But yeah,
totally understand. Come on. Holy shit.
the average vertical budget, I think, is between 150 and like an expensive one would be like $200,000 or $300,000. So it's pennies. Really, that you're working with, like, it just adds up quickly.
Holy shit. Money. It's always the money. Crazy.
Always money.
Here in Europe, there is every Friday a Europe jackpot lottery, and today you can win their 100 million euros. If I had won it, I can do a lot of verticals with that. And I can get a private jet and then all.
100 million euro.
Yeah.
Wow. I hope you get
Me too. Then I can buy a private jet and then I can fly all the actors over. So
I actually
what?
had a guy, we did fan meet and greets recently for part of VertFest. And I had a man who said that he was a retired military pilot, and his pitch was that he wanted to be a private pilot to take all of the vertical actors around the world to their filming locations. And I was,
Great, a chauffeur. Why
no,
not?
he said, he's like, it's only about the same price as like a first class ticket. And I said, you think they're flying us first class?
Nope.
We are fighting for economy plus. Like, we are begging for extra legroom. Okay.
If I
First
have the
class.
100 million, come on, I can buy a private jet and then you
Right.
can fly with me. And I
Like,
will
you don't
charge you only an
understand.
economy ticket, so what?
I wish I could show people like the videos of like what you don't see is all of us actors in the airport around the world, and we're checking our seat maps and we're trying to decide if we should risk getting the back row middle seat in hopes that no one sits next to us, or if we suck it up and take the window higher up, there's people next to you for sure. And it's the mad dash to pick
It's
God.
a hard life to be in a vertical actor, isn't it?
I think it's just like not as glamorous as people. I think people see us and they're like, wow, those are like A-list movie stars. That's like Scarlett
They made
Johansson.
it to Hollywood, so they will have a best life ever.
And we're like, who knows of a happy hour? I really want a margarita. I can't pay $20 for it.
Yeah, but you know, the thing is, that's why I made this podcast and I also talk to
Yeah.
fans and something like that, because I hate the sugar coating in the social media. I really hate that.
I'm just not very good at it. Like I, one thing about me is I feel like I'm at risk of being the Tom Holland, where I just can't shut up and I can't stop talking about things that like maybe I should just keep to myself. I'll tell you anything about myself or anything I've ever done within reason, but I'm not able to. I've tried and I can't stop myself. It's like a compulsion from like sharing the nitty-gritty details of what's going down. So every day I wake up and I check my email and I wait for something to come in that says, "Hey, Molly, this is the president of XYZ company. We saw you're put on TikTok recently." Like,
We're
oh rip.
sorry for that, but nope, you're out.
Oops. I'm like, the people wanted to know. They
Yeah,
asked. Sorry.
sometimes I think, how stupid do they think we are? You know what I mean? That's
Yeah.
we all know that every job has two sides. And to
Yeah.
be honest, if you have a glamorous glitter life, superstar rich, I'm sure you won't do verticals.
Right. No, that's the thing. If it was really that fancy, I'd be on Hulu right now.
Yes, I'm sure. But the thing is, when did you start acting? When did you start with that?
I
Was
was
it
a
ever
kid.
a dream job
Yeah.
as a kid? Is anyone in your
Yeah.
family in acting or no?
No, I grew up in a village in Michigan, and there were like 230 people who lived there. And so most of them were like my own family. There was nothing.
I know that. I grew up in a village with 600 people. Everyone
Yeah,
knows you.
nothing there.
Everyone exactly knows what you were doing. Yeah, I know
Yep.
that feeling.
Yeah. So I was like, I want to be an actor. And they were like,
Yep.
what?
Yep, for
Want
sure.
to be in movies. And they're like, okay, totally, you do that. So
Yeah,
they did.
sure for that.
Yeah. So I was allowed to do community theater as a kid. That was what I got to do. So I think I was in like Little Orphan Annie like four times or something. I'm making that up. But I did community theater all growing up throughout high school. And then I like got my BFA in it because that's what I thought I was supposed to do. And then that really didn't do much for me at all. And I moved to Los Angeles and I was a production assistant for a while. And then the verticals showed up. And then I jumped on that bandwagon right away. And they've kind of swept me off into the world. But I wasn't a full-time actor until I was 21.
Okay.
21. Yeah.
What was the
So
other
I
job
just
you did? You worked also behind the cameras? then, or what?
Yeah, that's how I got started in the film industry. Because mm-hmm. it turns out they actually really don't care about your community theater credits when you get to Hollywood.
How comes?
I know. I was like, I played Peter Pan and Tinkerbell in the same year. Like,
I got okay. two leads.
Right. Yeah, I didn't care. So I was doing background work in New York just to do anything to get on a film set. And I realized my first day of background work that if I wanted to be allowed to talk to the crew members or the cast, I had to be part of the crew. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, have you ever been on a film set before?
I did some acting here in Germany.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know what it's like in Germany, but in the US, like if you're on a big set, like the extras, the background are kept very separate from everyone else.
I know.
Yeah. You're okay, cool. So I was in this pool and I was like, I need to get over there. And
I want this door, not that door.
The only entry level position I could possibly get was as a production assistant, but I figured that wouldn't be very hard to get. And so I kind of lied my way into it. I was like, yeah, I'm a production assistant.
You lied your way into it.
It's Hollywood. Sue me. Like, everyone's lying about everything.
You had a vision. You followed your vision.
I was being ambitious. I was 19 and I was like, I'm a PA. And I figured they wouldn't care so long as I could actually do the job.
Yes.
So I kind of convinced myself. I made a fake resume.
A fake beep. Wait, when was it? Is it two? Are there enough years so that you?
Yeah.
If any police officer is hearing this episode, is the no?
This is all hypothetical. Is what we'll say.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. For sure.
This is a story I'm telling.
Yeah.
And
this was a vertical. This was your first vertical.
This is my first vertical plot. They told me I could be a PA. I went home and I literally Googled how to be a PA and I read everything I could. I made myself like a Quizlet flashcards of like the film set terminology. So I. And then I went to work. Yeah. And I found like a guy who was like a staff PA who was like about my age. And I was like, so. I don't know what I'm doing. What can you tell me? And I had like a couple, I'm so serious. I had a couple people who were just kind of on the down low, like feeding me information when I needed it. And so I faked my way through. But then once I had the first job, it was legitimate. I money laundered my career. So then I was a PA, keep advertising as such. So then when I moved to Los Angeles, I was like, let's just try the same thing. So
I am the PA.
It worked. I had my background gigs and I used those to get my PA jobs. And then once I was in as like a reputable PA, mm-hmm. now they'll let you talk to the cast and crew. So now I can go like schmooze it up with like the producers and the directors and like the cast. And I'm so serious. That's how I have my fancy manager to this day, is because of that.
And you were, so, hello, here I am. You waited for me. I'm in. This story.
Hey, I'm about to make your job easier. I'm going to be really good at my job and make your life easier. You should hire me.
With enough self-confidence, everything works. It's totally.
Yeah. Yep.
Totally.
Now here we are. And honestly, I kind of feel like I need to go back to it. Like I feel like I need to be back in like the hustle of it, because now I've become a little comfortable. Like the job's me and I sit here and I live on a cul-de-sac. Like I'm not fighting for my life outside my illegal sublet anymore. Like it's become like stable, which was really nice for like the first time in, you know, my career to be like, okay, I'm not about to have to move home and like die. But now it's like, now I'm a little too used to it. And I feel like I've lost some of that, like, go make it happen ambition that I started out with. And I feel like that was one of the things that made me successful. And I need to maybe push myself to get a little gritty with it again.
Are you getting too comfortable?
Yeah, I think so. But thrilled to be having this realization at 23 and not 33. Like, there's still time for me to turn the ship around and like.
Yeah. And I think the good thing is to be so comfortable so that you can choose wisely how to make the next steps. Because otherwise, when you're not so comfortable, it's hard to say, but you have to take what you get.
Yeah, and you're just trying to survive.
Yes.
Like, that's the hardest part. It's just, I remember I used to have, for the first like year and a half that I lived in Los Angeles, I was having crippling nightmares about having no money. And yeah. I would wake up in like cold sweats because I was just the fantasies of like all the consequences of being completely shit broke mm-hmm. would just cycle through. It was a constant thing. And yeah. so then the verticals came and were like, hey, we're not going to pay you like much, but you can like buy groceries and like you don't have to live.
It's enough to live. Yeah.
And it just changed my entire world. And so that is
I think it's good. I mean, in this whole fast vertical world, it's so needed that you are mentally stable. So
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, it gets very quick.
Because I'm sure that there are a lot without a mental stabilization, and when I think about you got 1 week before the production start round about the information you booked a role or not, so you cannot make plans for the next 6 weeks because you don't know what happened till then, so you have every month to live again without this fear, will there enough job? Will there be enough money? For me, this would be horror, truly.
Well, so here's the thing I want to caveat this with is like, because I hear a lot from fans who are like, wow, you guys work so hard. You guys are so incredible. I can't believe like all the stuff you put us through. Yes, it's hard, but I think that being an artist professionally is a privilege in and of itself. Mm-hmm. And it's something, and the idea of like living below your means and having, you know, being chronically exhausted, having unpredictable income and just general life instability and not being able to plan because you're kind of in that survival mode. That is a situation that so many people are in across many industries. And it's a like such a reflection of like the current economic status of mm-hmm. a lot of parts of the world. And like, I think the average person is struggling, you know, financially, like finances are one of the biggest struggles for every adult. And so I don't think there's anything particularly noble, unique, or exceptionally difficult about the path that we've chosen. And I think just to do this and to choose this and to be able to choose to do this is a privilege.
Yeah.
Not everyone can do it. And there's a ton of luck and you have to be set up for success in a lot of ways. And so I don't think it's particularly courageous of us to do, but it's just not something that I think people expect when they watch like the verticals or movies or TV shows. Like your first thought is you think that the people are living these super luxe lives. Mm. Yeah. And so I think people are very surprised to find out like how scrappy it often is, especially in the beginning. And then it's like, you're applying for food stamps and then you go into work and they dress you in designer to go play like an heiress. And then like, that's weird. That's strange. But yeah, I feel like we're just above all really, really fortunate that like these are the struggles that we get to like opt into, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
We're not working in the coal mines. We're not even working the drive-through. Like we're not saving people's lives on an operating table. Like we're making people smile.
Yeah, I think there are a lot more other jobs that makes more pressure on the people who do it. But you know, this vertical space or what you are doing is, I think, because it's more popular, you know, the people know you from social media, you got more watched than, I don't know, a person who goes to a company two streets far away, work the 7 to 9 or 7 to 5 job and good. So what do you think what improvement is needed in this vertical industry to make it a bit more comfortable?
I think it's the same stuff that like we've all been talking about for the past like 3 years since they came out of like, or 2 years, however long it's been, of ending the abuse stories, or at least handling them in a much more responsible way. Yeah. And getting more creative with it across the board. And I think, you know, money talks. And at the very least for me, I would like to see that if we're doing a story that is going to deal with domestic abuse, I want those profits, a chunk of them, to go to domestic violence
foundations, organizations. And,
let's, if we're going to exploit these stories and we're going to make tens of millions of dollars off of these stories, like we need to be doing something that's more valuable than just putting it out on the internet and letting people do whatever they will with it.
Yeah.
And so I really think, or like when we have like the firefighting stories, which has become a super popular trope this year, totally. Let's have a hot and sexy firefighter and we'll get all up in it. But let's take some of that money and we're using the real events that we're exploiting for profit. And let's put that profit back towards, let's use it to raise awareness, you know, and give the money to the victims who, I mean, especially in Los Angeles, that hits so close to home. We've been struggling with the fires, and there are, we know people, like personally, we all know people who are like, have been displaced, or like there, you can drive and see the destruction from like the recent fires, like just down the street from the house. So I take a lot of issue with using people's very real traumas for profit and pocketing all of that. And I think that maybe we're not going to stop telling, you know, the violent stories and the abuse stories and whatever, but the very least we can do, I would urge all of the platforms to really look at where we're placing that profit and see if there are some organizations that would really benefit from having a chunk of money that, which I think kind of belongs to them since we're exploiting their stories.
For the end, I want to do a 5-question quickie with you, like I do with everyone. First question, because I love to cook. What's your favorite dish?
I'm a sushi girl.
Is there a good sushi shop in LA?
I have about 20 sushi restaurants on my street. I'm very thankful.
What, 20?
And
what?
There are so many. I live in a part of LA that has no shortage. There's just sushi restaurants everywhere.
So you live in heaven, in sushi heaven.
it's everything I've ever wanted. My go-to, I like a salmon avocado and cucumber roll, and then I like a tuna or like yellowtail and scallion or something.
Do you make sometimes sushi by yourself?
I've tried before. It's just never as good. It's like fine. It's fine.
It's eatable.
Yeah.
Okay. That's good.
But it's not even cheaper. Like to buy sushi grade fish and then, you know, to put it all together, I'm just going to go give them $20 down the street and have it taste good.
And you're absolutely satisfied with the sushi and you don't even have to work to do it. So, and you don't have to clean your kitchen. So everything's fine. I totally understand. Oh, it's nice. I love sushi too, but we haven't here a great sushi shop. No, not
shocker.
Really.
Germany doesn't have great sushi.
No, I live in a landscape. I'm not living in a big town. In the big towns, for example, in Hamburg, but that's totally on the other side of Germany than I live. I live near the border to Austria, Switzerland, and Luxembourg.
Oh, okay.
In the north, they can make better sushi because the north is more the fish side of Germany. And in Hamburg, I ate really great sushi. But here in the south, not so good. But yeah, we have other great food here in South Germany, which is in no other part of Germany available. So I won't say anything.
I need to get over there. I need to get over there. My
Have you
all
ever
of
been
my
in
great
Germany?
No, but my whole family is German. So it's my
Your
legal
whole
last name.
family is German and you never have been to Germany? What's wrong, Molly?
No. So my last name is not actually Anderson. It's Jass, Jass.
Yes.
So
That's nice.
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
Molly,
Jass.
Molly, yes.
Yep.
Huh. Okay. Yes. Yeah, that's more typical German. Are your
I
parents
think
German?
yeah.
Okay.
They've been in the US. They've been in the US since my grandparents.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
But there's like distant family still in Germany, and they know where everyone used to live and whatever. So there is
so do you have sometimes German food?
a little bit. I mean, nowhere near as good as it would be in Germany, but there's a couple
Yeah.
recipes for sure that come
So
out.
when you will come to Germany, you have to come mostly near November when all the Christmas markets are available. That's so nice, really. That's a so nice tradition. And I know a lot of people from the US which come to Germany only for the Christmas markets. Yeah. Christmas markets are really nice. You
Wow.
have to watch. That's nice.
Maybe this is my year.
Maybe if I won the $100 million euros,
Oh,
I'll invite you to a vertical to Germany. Then we do a Christmas vertical on a Christmas market, okay? I love Christmas. I truly love Christmas.
I would totally do another Christmas one in Christmas Town, Germany, at the Christmas market.
With snow. Do you
Snow.
like snow?
I mean, I grew up around it and I do ski still, which I love.
Okay.
So it's got its perks. I'm just often very cold. I have issues being cold.
That can happen when it's
You're
winter,
right.
but it's okay. What's your actual favorite film to watch?
My Everything Everywhere All at Once has been a favorite since I saw it in theaters when it came out.
I don't know this title. Is it a good
It
one?
won Best Picture last like 2 years ago. It's an A24 movie. It's Michelle Yeoh won Best Leading Actress for it too. It was kind of her like return to cinema. It's really a dynamic movie. And then
I have to watch it.
it's really good. It's like a big, it's an intense watch. It's not like a tee-hee little movie night kind
No
of movie.
horror. No horror.
No horror, but there's a lot going on. It's not really a casual, like just drink a beer with your buddies and like throw it
Okay.
on stuff
Okay.
movie. It's like you're sitting down to watch this
To
movie.
concentrate and to follow the story. Okay. Yeah, I will look at that. What's your favorite song? What's a song you put on loud, singing, dancing to your apartment to get in a good mood?
My Fun by Suki Waterhouse.
Yeah, that's good. That's
Do you know
good.
it?
And what's your favorite vertical so far from yours?
I think one I just wrapped one that which I guess this is aging where we are in time at this recording.
Yeah. No, but when I said to you, Molly, I want to watch a vertical with you in, which would you say I should have watched?
I feel like my favorite I keep coming back to is Scoring My Sexy Coach with Sam Meyerson and Jess Jacoby as my evil twin
Was
sister.
it the fence one?
Fencing one.
That was
It's not
cool.
huge. It's not super popular. It came out
But it
this.
was a new kind of story. It was the
But it
one of the
won.
first sporty one and I liked
Yeah,
it.
I play an athlete in it, which I love playing athletes. I think they're so fun. And I loved the story of that, and I loved how much that was a really good example of I'm leading, but I'm driving the story. Like
Yeah.
I'm the one making the decisions and facing the consequences of my actions throughout the whole thing. So that I felt really in control, and I felt like I was actually leading and not just being, a little bit of a puppet. And then I was working with some really great actors, which makes it fun. And then it was funny. There were
Yeah,
comedic
I
relief.
liked it. I liked it really. Yeah.
Yeah, that was my favorite.
And missing genre, the last question. Besides comedy.
Oh, missing genre?
Yeah.
Horror.
No. I can't watch this.
Mystery. I
I
want
can't.
mystery too.
Oh yeah, mystery would be great.
Like a good old like murder mystery whodunit kind of situation.
Ha!
Or like we
Yeah,
need a clue.
a detective. A detective.
I want to be Nancy Drew.
So all ones in a Sherlock Holmes style.
Yeah.
Who was the
Can you
murderer?
imagine?
It can't be the gardener. No, it can't be him.
I would
Oh yeah, that would be
love to be a
great.
little
All kind of Miss
detective.
Marple, huh?
Yes, I look really good in plaid. We can give me a cute little plaid coat.
Okay, let's keep that in mind. If I won the 100 million, we will do a Christmas
It
one
could
and a
be.
Miss Marple one.
No, and it
Or a
could be
Miss
like
Marple on a
franchise.
Christmas market.
I think we franchise it. I think every vertical is like a different mystery to solve, and I'm just like the through line is I'm the detective going almost like a procedural for
You
verticals.
visit vampires, you visit werewolves, you visit a Christmas market. That's a good.
I see it.
We got it, Molly. We got it. I see that. We got it. Molly, thank you so much for taking time to talk with me. It was such a pleasure having you.
Oh, this was so much fun.
Yeah, but we have to keep. I come back to you. When I got the 100 million, I will
Let
reach
me
out.
know.
Yeah. I sent you then my private chat, and then you come over to Europe, to Germany.
Say we're on, and I'll get to the airport.
Yeah, let's do so. If I will send you only the airplane emoji, you know what will happen. Okay. Let's do this. Thank you very much. I wish you all the best. Have a really nice weekend ahead of you. And thanks for having you. It was really a pleasure.
Thanks for bringing me on. This was an absolute blast. Cannot wait to see it.
Bye, Molly.
Bye.
This is a wrap on this episode, and I hope you tune in again.